Welcome to the Hospital Finance Podcast, your go-to source for information and insights that can help you protect and enhance revenue at your hospital. And now, the host of the Hospital Finance Podcast, Michael Passanante.
Welcome back to the Hospital Finance Podcast. This is Mike Passanante. Glad you could be with us today. Today I'm joined by John Dalton, who's an advisor emeritus here at Bessler Consulting and a longtime board member of St. Joseph's Healthcare System in Paterson, New Jersey. John's had quite a storied career in healthcare finance, and he's taken on a project to sort of illuminate the history of healthcare reform in the United States. And over a three-part series here, John is going to share with us that information and some of the revelations and some of the surprising things that have come out of healthcare reform throughout the United States and our long history. So, John, welcome.
Nice to be here, Mike.
So, John, tell us a little bit about what prompted you to take on this project.
Well, in January 2015, the CEO and board chair at St. Joe's asked me to chair a newly formed strategic planning committee. And as part of that process, we wanted to be open and inclusive, so we set up a rather large committee with work groups, including a lot of our chiefs and chairs and community physicians and the like. And as part of that process to introduce them to strategic planning, we decided it might be a good idea to give them some background. So since I've been around a long time and involved in a lot of the reform initiatives, I put together a presentation for the committee and the work groups to really walk them through how we got to where we are today in terms of financing the healthcare delivery system. What surprised me was for many of the docs, this was kind of a revelation because they're great on the clinical side, they really had no idea of how the whole financing mechanisms had developed over the last 80 or 90 years.
So let's start at the beginning then. We'll call this part one. All Americans were uninsured. So there was a time in the country where there really wasn't formal health insurance, and so I think your presentation starts out in the 1930s. So why don't you take us to that time and tell us a little bit about how Americans lived and how health insurance operated then.
Right. At the time I was born in 1938, there was only some formative health insurance initiatives at the beginning. But if you go back to the Great Depression and immediately following the Great Depression, if you needed health care in the United States, you relied either on a municipal hospital or one of the religious hospitals, and they took whatever you had the ability to pay. In my instance, we were fortunate that I was born in Jersey City, where the Margaret Haig Maternity Hospital was New Jersey's biggest baby factory. Mom delivered in November 1938. She got to have a full week of postpartum stay. My late twin brother and I were 6 weeks premature, so we ended up staying for about 6 weeks. And we basically were covered by the city. There was no charge for the services. The 30s were tough. Unemployment in the U.S. Peaked at 20-25%. People didn't have jobs, resources. We were fortunate to be in a place like Jersey City. The Margaret Haig, just to put in perspective, opened in 1931, gorgeous Art Deco building, part of the Jersey City Medical Center. From the time it opened in 31 until it closed in 1979, 350,000 babies were born there. So most anybody who comes from Jersey City was born at the Haig. To put that in perspective, that's an average of 9,200 babies a year, or on a daily basis, every day that that hospital was open, 25 babies got delivered. In 1932, Franklin Delano Roosevelt was elected president and undertook the whole New Deal initiatives, part of which was construction of that old Jersey City Medical Center complex. He followed his cousin Teddy's lead, and he proposed to include publicly funded health care programs as part of the Social Security legislation. Unfortunately, he had to remove those provisions from the bill because of there was very strong opposition to compulsory health insurance from the American Medical Association and all state and local affiliates. So under Roosevelt, we got Social Security, but did not get healthcare insurance. However, in the late 30s, groups of hospitals, again, because of their financial concerns, began to form their own not-for-profit health insurance plans, and that was the evolution and the beginning of the Blue Cross plans.
So we get to the beginning of World War II, and our entry into the war really kind of changed the dynamic, maybe inadvertently, but eventually it changed the dynamic of healthcare. Can you talk to us about that?
Yeah, it was an example of the law of unintended consequences. In building up to support the war effort, Kaiser Steel built the first steel plant west of the Rockies in the middle of a desert in Fontana, California, I guess about 90 miles east of Los Angeles. Then they were faced with the problem of, how do we hire and staff? Because being World War II, there were already wage and price controls in place, so they couldn't pay a higher wage rate than folks in L.A. were getting. And here they are sitting in the middle of the desert trying to staff a steel plant. So what they came up with was to provide health care on-site for their employees who moved to Fontana to staff the steel plant. Kaiser Steel is long gone, but Kaiser Permanente remains today. That was the beginning of employer-sponsored health care coverage.
And so we roll into the 1950s, and there's some evolution there as well, and maybe some looks at the what universal coverage could be from the likes of President Truman to start. But can you talk to us about some of the initiatives that were happening in that time frame?
Sure. Kaiser generally gets credit for the birth of employer-sponsored health care. When Harry Truman became president following Franklin Delano Roosevelt's death, when he was reelected in 1948 against all odds, in 1949 he again proposed universal health care as part of his Fair Deal program. So we had Franklin with the New Deal, Harry Truman with the Fair Deal. But again, in the face of unanimous and strong opposition from the AMA, he had to drop that proposal. In 1952, Dwight D. Eisenhower, America's first five-star general, was elected president. And the Eisenhower years were best remembered as a time of relative peace and prosperity. He ended the Korean War. It was a police action because the Congress never formally declared war. But during Eisenhower's years, we saw enormous growth in employer-sponsored health care insurance. Just one quick example. I came home from school, seventh grade, spring of 1951, and not feeling well. Dad got home from work, called our family doctor, who also happened to be a surgeon. He made a house call, came to the house, did some tests, says, you need your appendix taken out. Picks up the phone, calls over to St. Francis Hospital about four blocks away, says, set up the OR, I'm bringing somebody in. So my dad walks me over to the hospital. Next thing I know, I wake up the next morning in the 12-bed children's ward, missing an appendix. But it was a different era then. I ended up with a full 7-day stay after an appendectomy and was sent home with instructions to remain on bed rest for 5 weeks before I could go back to school, which was great. But throughout the 50s, what we saw, Eisenhower, his major contribution was the development of the national highway system. But throughout that period, we saw employer-sponsored health insurance grow. And since my dad was a member of the newspaper guild, my appendectomy was covered by his employer.
So throughout the 40s and well into the 50s, you see this trend of employed people picking up health care insurance. But then you've got this whole segment of the population, the retired population. And by the time we got to the 1960s, now there's an impetus to try to deal with that issue and get more people on health insurance. So we might know the outcome of that, but talk to us about how that evolved and some of the dynamics.
Well, the 60s were turbulent times on more than just the health care front, as you well know. But after receiving my engineering degree in 1960, I went to work for a Fortune 500 chemical company. And early in 1962, they sent me out to Los Angeles to start up and run a small chemical plant. Those were interesting times to be in California, Southern California in particular. The state had just implemented the nation's first Fair Employment Practices Commission. And I'm old enough to remember want ads that said Irish and Italians need not apply. But more importantly, L.A. County had just implemented the Air Pollution Control District to try and fight smog. So here I'm, a rookie 23-year-old engineer, having to deal with all kinds of regulations with emissions and whatnot that my senior folks back east had no clue about. So, But in October 1962, our first child was born at St. Joseph's Hospital in Orange, California. And to my wife's dismay, while her friends back here in Jersey were enjoying 5-day postpartum stays, she was sent home in 2 days. That was Welcome to California. In 65, my second son was born at Presbyterian Intercommunity Hospital in Whittier. We had bought a house and moved to Whittier. And again, Ann was sent home in 2 days. But what I remember most from that stay, I still have the bill. The total charges for mother and baby for 2 days stay, $167. Now, to put it in perspective, at that time I was making about $200 a week, but still $167 in charges for a normal delivery is hard to believe these days.
Yeah, hard to argue with, yeah. Right?
But I still have the bill. And, of course, my employer paid 80%. I paid 20%. So that was California. Third child was born in Christ Community Hospital in Oak Lawn, Illinois, which is now part of Advocate Health System, one of the bigger players in the Chicago area. But after I finished my MBA in finance there, the company moving back to headquarters, and I decided to put down roots and change jobs. Went to work for what's now Deloitte. It was Haskins & Sells at the time in New York as a senior consultant, and that's when I first got involved in directly assisting healthcare providers. But back to the 60s, after Kennedy's assassination in 1963, Lyndon Baines Johnson became president. And while Kennedy was somewhat of a visionary, Johnson was a mechanic. He knew how to work the Congress. He knew how to work the cloakrooms. And got an enormous amount of the New Frontier legislation passed, including the Voting Rights Bill, the Civil Rights Bill, and of importance to us, Title 18 Medicare, which was named after Canada's pre-existing health care for all program. And Title 19, Medicaid, which now provided coverage for medically needy individuals throughout the country. Medicare was a federal program, covered seniors, so now also it was cost-based reimbursements, so now seniors had coverage. And Medicaid was a federal and state program. In most cases, the feds paid 50%, state picked up the other 50% of the costs. So with that expansion, now all of a sudden, a much larger segment of our population didn't have to worry about care, especially seniors who tend to be the higher users at the end of life of healthcare systems. Of interest to our folks in New Jersey, a little piece of healthcare trivia that you can dazzle your friends with, the first Medicare inpatient claim was paid here in New Jersey. It was processed by Horizon, what's now Horizon Blue Cross, and then they cut the check and drove it up the road to Jack Farmer, who was CFO at East Orange General Hospital. It actually made the 5 o'clock news. Welcome to Medicare.
Well, there's nothing like some Jersey pride in this story, so we appreciate that coming out of here in Princeton, New Jersey. So, John, that was a great retrospect on sort of a 30-year period there as we're in the 20th century and healthcare is changing. I know you'll be coming back for part two, and we'll be talking about sort of a very changing environment where costs begin to skyrocket, rate setting emerges, and really a lot of different changes impact healthcare finance. So we're looking forward to that.
Thanks, Mike.
You bet, John. Thanks so much. If you enjoy the Hospital Finance Podcast, please head up to iTunes to subscribe and leave us a positive review.
This concludes today's episode of the Hospital Finance Podcast. For show notes and additional resources to help you protect and enhance revenue at your hospital, visit Bessler.com/podcasts. The Hospital Finance Podcast is a production of Bessler Consulting.